Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, March 29th, 2020. Section A. Sheriff says take heed and take seriously. Mayor likely to issue shelter in place this week. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths is anxious for residents to take the threat of contracting COVID-19 seriously and is urging Odessans to stay home and stay safe. Griffiths said Saturday that early in the pandemic he was skeptical like others, but that we must take this seriously. We must shut down for a bit like every other community until the threat is over. The sheriff's remarks come a day after the first positive case was reported in Ector County and a day after two of his deputies were also sent for testing. Griffiths confirmed one deputy took a report about 10 days ago at the home of a couple who maintains homes in both Ector County and Dallas. Both the husband and wife were tested in Dallas and were positive for the coronavirus. The man, as of Friday, remained hospitalized in Dallas, but the wife showed light symptoms and was not hospitalized. After an Ector County Sheriff's Office investigator called the couple to follow up on the report, he discovered that they had tested positive and alerted the sheriff, who sent the deputy who responded to the home for testing on Friday and then sent him home to self-quarantine. A second deputy who shares a patrol unit with the responding deputy was also sent for testing, as well as his pregnant wife. Griffiths said he spoke to the woman who tested positive and that she was very gracious and concerned about the exposure at their Odessa home. He said both deputies are in self-quarantine and that test results could be back on Monday. Griffiths said he hopes that Odessans will begin to understand how important it is right now to limit contact with others. We have to be vigilant, and this is just a different game, and people need to heed this and take it seriously. Deputies are often sent for testing for other illnesses like hepatitis and HIV after coming into contact with someone who is infected. He said as long as they are quarantined pending test results, they are being paid, and that they continue to screen anyone who goes into the detention center for business, and that it remains locked down to visitation with prisoners other than attorneys or medical staff. The first positive result in Ector County was announced Friday. To date, 71 people have been tested with 26 negative and 44 pending results. No information was given on the person who tested positive by Ector County. County Judge Debbie Hayes announced the first positive on Facebook and then held a hasty and often combative news conference, but offered few details about why so few in Ector County have been tested. Midland has offered daily briefings and has 11 confirmed cases as of Saturday. One person there has died. CBS 7 reports that 245 have been tested in Midland. Lubbock is offering both briefings and an up-to-date website that details positive and testing numbers and also does not name those who test positive, but does detail places they have spent a lot of time at. Hayes indicated during the Friday news conference that private lab testing is not being reported to the county, and that accounts for low testing numbers. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said he is working with the state and local labs and will report his findings to the county first. He became involved after a number of people asked him to find out why so few had been tested. Griffiths said the time is now to shut down the traffic and constant trips to the grocery store. Surely everyone has enough toilet paper by now. The man who tested positive in Dallas, Griffiths said, is in his 60s and in good health. Griffiths said the couple notified workers who had been doing work on their Odessa home of their positive test. Mayor David Turner Saturday said a shelter in place that the city is working on will update the mayoral declaration of local disaster. He projects there will be an announcement made regarding the update on Monday. Many of the shelter-in-place orders allow farmers markets and flea markets, he said, which encourages large groups to gather. He said that if those options are allowed, then it's not restrictive enough. Turner said that the city closed park playgrounds, equipment, and pavilions, but that they will keep walking trails open. He said that the update would limit businesses where there is a lot of face-to-face contact, like nail and hair salons, but that the city will try to keep the critical businesses open, as well as law enforcement and other entities that keep the community safe. Ratliff Ranch Golf Links will close Monday until further notice. We want you to work from home, and we are going to model that at the city. We are going to send our employees home except for critical services, he said. He said that the update will ask businesses to do the same. He also mentioned that if someone in a household is sick, then that whole household needs to stay home. Mayor David Turner issued a statement Saturday. He said his mother is ill and currently hospitalized. As you can imagine, this has been a difficult time for my family and me. Due to her condition, she has been tested for COVID-19, and we expect her results in the next 7 to 10 days. While my mother has been hospitalized, I have followed protocol set by the CDC and the hospital. He stated he has not been within 10 feet of her and has worn an N95 mask and protective gear. His mother's doctor has not advised of a need to quarantine. I have not put anyone in any danger of exposure to COVID-19. I understand the severity of the public health crisis we are currently in, and I want all of you to be assured the safety and well-being of my family, my staff, and the city of Odessa are of the utmost importance to me. We must all do our parts to flatten the curve, and I ask that you all join me in doing just that.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, March 29th, 2020. This is the section called Local and State. This article is entitled Midland Manufacturer to Produce Hand Sanitizer by Sam Waller. A Midland chemical manufacturer is doing its part to help with the nationwide shortage of hand sanitizer that has occurred during the coronavirus pandemic. Shotwell Hydrogenics expects to produce 25,000 gallons per day starting this week, supplying liquid hand sanitizer to distributors on a commercial scale. One of the aspects, obviously, was the impact this is going to have in the community and how we can get engaged with the community and continue to support the community, Shotwell Hydrogenics CEO Bravis Brown said. We were looking to see what to do, and we realized one of our best possible assets in this situation was Shotwell Hydrogenics. Myself and others who are part of the team have been engaged in the oil and gas industry for 35-plus years. It was a community we knew was going to have a severe impact during this time frame. We wanted to see how we could work with them. We thought we could utilize the facilities, the capacities available there for the hand sanitizer for the local community and other opportunities. Then we looked at what we needed to do and modified the support path. In addition to providing a needed public service, Brown said the move allows Shotwell Hydrogenics to keep its entire workforce employed. We don't have a significant amount of employees, he said. They do have families, of course, and we're able to support that as well. We have a very automated process. It's a very streamlined process, so it's a limited overall headcount. We have going into this at Shotwell an active workforce of 9 employees, and all the employees will remain in place. Potentially, we could bring on some additional labor for increased demand if that arises. Shotwell Hydrogenics was founded in February 2017 and began production that fall with a focus on the oil and gas industry, Brown said. That was the initial purpose, and that's where we started at, and that's the majority of the products today, he said. The last 6 to 10 months, we've started to get more diversified. That's primarily been agricultural products. Brown said, and adding hand sanitizer to the company's output required minimal upgrades to the production line. We had 2 activities that had to take place, he said. One was modifying what we call the S mixer. We put some inline injectors on that particular asset to be able to support running the existing oil and gas product needs while also running the hand sanitizer. The other is going to be support raw material and finished outbound material storage. We had some excess storage tanks that we were able to move inside the facility to support offloads from both the S and F mixers. Once we were able to get those in place, it was all about in the piping and retrofitting existing piping to support those additional storage tanks for the output. Once that was in place, it was a strong focus on the acquisition and being able to secure raw materials. That's probably more difficult than having to modify the facility in this current environment. Shotwell Hydrogenics will produce 2 formulations of hand sanitizer, a 70% isopropyl alcohol solution and a 70% ethyl alcohol solution. The formulation and testing were overseen by Dr. Robert Geiger, Vice President of Product Development for Shotwell's parent company, BPS Just Energy Technology, according to a news release by Shotwell. Shotwell started out already having a permit for the IPA, Brown said. The isopropanol is something we utilize in the products we manufacture for oil and gas. It was easy for us to start there as far as securing raw materials. We knew we could produce that particular product. Once we got more engaged with this, we understood that the ethyl alcohol was also being requested by the customers. I think there are different applications as far as one of them, ethyl alcohol, being more for the community and the other being more for federal medical-type requirements in the quality of the alcohols. Brown said offering different products allows the company more flexibility. The main reason we got into ethyl was to be able to expand our ability to gather other resources, he said. There's limited resources of both at this point, so it gave us the ability to have a broader selection of raw materials. Brown said Shotwell Hydrogenics will not be able to offer its products on a retail basis for the time being. We see an opportunity with what we're shipping out once we get into the co-packing process, he said, to have a percentage of what we're producing, at least on some of the initial productions, come back to the Midland facility and be available for local customers and communities. We're shipping products to different co-packers across the U.S. Those co-packers are where the bottling process takes place in producing different size containers. Those are kind of across the board and different sizes are being requested. Different bottlers do different sizes, so that's why we've got multiple players in that process. This column is entitled Saving PPE for Those Who Need It Most by Levi Stone, RN, MSN, Chief Nursing Officer. Personal protective equipment, known as PPE, is an essential component ensuring the safety and protection of lives for those using them. PPE comes in various forms specific to the industry they're used in, whether it's a helmet for construction workers, ballistic vests for law enforcement, bunker gear for firefighters, steel-toed boots for rig hands, or safety goggles for carpenters. Having the right PPE keeps employees safe from known risks associated with their respective profession. In light of the COVID-19 virus pandemic, the availability of PPE for healthcare professionals has taken center stage. While the world scrambles with collaboration from governments and private sector manufacturers in providing more PPE, leaders of hospitals and healthcare systems must also do their part in managing the supply chain so essential frontline staff, i.e. doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, technicians, etc., have what they need to protect themselves and their patients. A major piece of the PPE issue involves masks, both standard surgical masks and N95 respirators. It's one of the many things keeping hospital leaders up at night with questions such as, do we have enough inventory on hand? Can our vendors keep up with the demand? Or is there enough to borrow from other facilities to maintain stock? One question to be addressed is, are we managing our current supplies effectively? A percentage of those depletions come from overutilization and misuse. Examples include providing masks to those not meeting Centers for Disease Control and Prevention standards for use, making masks available to visitors without controlling inventory, and being cognizant of who has access to such items to avoid theft and hoarding. Additionally, assessments should be made by hospitals to prioritize masks to employees and departments needing them over those likely not requiring them. Arbitrarily issuing of masks to employees who are not providing direct patient care or spending time with patients with known risks or diagnoses doesn't follow standards outlined by the CDC. Nor is advising the use of homemade masks for hospital staff a responsible directive either. Wearing masks unnecessarily, especially of the homemade variety, can actually have a contradictory effect on minimizing disease spread. Several examples, such as promoting runny noses and coughing after extended wear, both of which are creating droplets and secretions from your body. Touching your face to routinely readjust the mask, which proper hand hygiene must be followed before and after readjustment to avoid potential infection. And when the mask is taken off, it literally showers the droplets created from the extended wear. Another factor to consider are what materials homemade masks might be made from. Some are more porous and permeable than others, leaving the very infectious agent you're trying to avoid being breathed right into your body anyway. While the burden in managing the nation's availability of masks is largely dependent on the healthcare systems, it's also the public's responsibility. Yet the media likes to use captivating video clips of everyday folks wearing masks, so it's easy to assume we, even a few hospital CEOs, should all be wearing them. However, this is not the case, and even contradicts CDC standards for helping mitigate the spread of illness. Instead, masks should only be worn by healthcare professionals directly caring for patients with known risks and diagnoses that warrant it. Outside of the healthcare arena, only people at high risk for acquiring COVID-19 or other respiratory illnesses would need to wear masks. Examples of such individuals include the elderly, immunocompromised, those battling cancer, those who have failing organs or have chronic respiratory conditions, to name a few. Even then, staying home is far more effective than going into public places where a mask would be needed. To reiterate, the CDC does not recommend that people who are well wear a face mask to protect themselves from respiratory diseases, including COVID-19. Hoarding any masks, especially the N95s, isn't necessary. In fact, it's downright irresponsible and inhibits efforts in safely treating patients with conditions warranting protection. It's a practice needing to stop immediately, so this essential PPE get to those needing them the most. Medical professionals caring directly for patients with known conditions or assessing those who are exhibiting signs and symptoms consistent with contagious respiratory illness. If you absolutely must hoard something to feel safer, stockpile on hand soap, alcohol gel, and a measure of common sense. All three will see us through this trying time. This article is entitled ECISD to Closed Buildings Set Up Help Desk by Ruth Campbell. Starting Monday, Ector County ISD's buildings will be closed to the public but accessible by phone. The public may contact the district by phone from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Student Superintendent Scott Murray said in an interview Friday. Parents may still pick up packets and technology, but we will deliver those outside of the building. We actually deliver those at the entrance to the schools, Murray said. If people need materials or need to meet with someone, Murray said they will work through what that looks like. But in general, we are closed to the public. It's important that if parents need anything at all, that they still reach out by telephone, he stressed. Also, starting Monday, the district will launch a remote learning technology help desk because we've recognized that some of our parents and kids are struggling with some of the digital content, whether it's that they don't know their password or they're having some issues with a web browser they may be using or other technical issues. In addition, we have provided technology to our students. They are now checking technology devices out from school, and we need to be able to provide technical support and assistance. So starting Monday morning, we will launch a help desk. It will be open every day from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the telephone number for that help desk is 432-456-0013, Murray said. He added that it will be staffed by ECISD technicians. The meal service program also will be undergoing some changes. Serving hours will be 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday. Parents may pick up breakfast and lunch during those hours. The child still has to be present. In addition, we're making an adjustment to some of the serving locations. We have four of our locations that we're going to be closing because they are just not very busy, and then we're opening two new locations. So we would encourage all of our parents to visit the ECISD website to ensure that their locations are open, Murray said. ECISD will close George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa, Hayes and Reagan Elementary Schools, and Lamar Early Education Center. They will open the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department and the South Ector Volunteer Fire Department. Additionally, ECISD hosted a Facebook Live conversation Friday on the ECISD Facebook page. Murray said they will provide general updates and answer questions. We hope so. We're going to do it again next week. We want to feature some teachers, principals, and counselors so that moms and dads could talk directly to teachers, principals, and counselors and ask them questions as well. We hope to continue to do this on a regular basis as we better understand the needs of our community, and we want to put the people in front of them that they would like to chat with. So we look forward to hosting several more of these opportunities, Murray said. This is the obituary column, Sunday, March 29th, 2020. Michael Henry O'Donnell, Odessa. Michael Henry O'Donnell, Jr., age 39, of Odessa, Texas, stepped into the arms of his Savior, Jesus Christ, on Saturday, March 21st, 2020. He was born in Odessa, Texas, on September 4th, 1980, to Michael Henry O'Donnell and Annette K. Drummond. When Michael was the age of 7, Annette went into the arms of Jesus, and Michael went to live with his second parents, Steve and Donna Bell. Those left to cherish his love and memories are his parents, Steve and Donna Bell, sons Cayman O'Donnell and Brady O'Donnell, daughter Kaylee O'Donnell, brothers Jason Wheeler and Vernon Fuqua, sisters Tonya Chavez and Lena Fuqua, aunt and uncle Forrest and Sharon Bunger, cousin Melody Compton, Wesley and Anne Marie Compton, as well as numerous family and friends. He was preceded in death by his mother, Annette Drummond, grandmother Mildred Lee, grandparents Louis and Laverne Bell, aunt Marcia Drummond, and uncle Robert Drummond. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Mary Beth Duncan Wilson, Odessa. Mary Beth Duncan Wilson was born on September 20, 1945, in Carlsbad, New Mexico, to Aubrey and Catherine Duncan. She died at her home in Odessa, Texas, on March 25, 2020, surrounded by her loving family. Mary Beth was preceded in death by her beloved parents. She is survived by her daughters and sister-in-laws, Karen and Gerald Maybell of Midland, Cammy and Aaron Little of Midland, three grandchildren, Jaden and McKenna Wilson and Avett Little, adopted children and grandchildren, Gaudencia and Joshua Bobo, and Luke and Samantha Bobo of Midland, two brothers, Phil Duncan, Roberta of the Woodlands, and Cecil Duncan, Sharon of Katy. Services with Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home will be announced at a later date. Clifford Ennis Vickery, Odessa. Clifford Ennis Vickery, age 78, of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life to his heavenly home on Monday, March 23, 2020, in Odessa. Due to the current pandemic, a memorial service will be scheduled at a later date. Services will be held in Milfay, Oklahoma, and he will be laid to rest at Black Victory Cemetery in Stroud, Oklahoma. Clifford was born in Stroud, Oklahoma, to Bud Franklin Vickery and Lula Case Vickery on February 9, 1942. Clifford is preceded in death by his wife Clara Smart Vickery, parents Bud and Lula Vickery, brothers Clyde Vickery and Robert Vickery, and sisters Eva Weems and Sandra DeCamp. He is survived by his beloved companion Cindy Stevens, son Clifton Vickery, and wife Donna, daughters LaCrissa Shannon and husband Steve, and LaClifta Newby, stepsons Charles Bates and wife Jennifer, Johnny Bates and his wife Lisa, brother Gene Vickery, and sisters Nadine Henson, Zelma Stephen, and Alice Dodd, 14 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family is requesting donations be made to the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org or to the Family Cemetery at Black Cemetery Fund, care of Barbara Vickery, 31911 South 513th West Avenue, Depew, Oklahoma, 74028. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Charles J. Mulkey, Odessa. Charles J. Mulkey, 90, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 28, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangement are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Paul David Hughes, Midland. Paul David Hughes, 69, of Midland, died Thursday, March 26, 2020, in Midland. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. March 31, 2020, at American Heritage Cemetery. Jonathan Hartzer is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Fermin Vasquez Jr., Odessa. Fermin Vasquez Jr., 83, died Friday, March 27, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
This is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, March 28, 2020. Coronavirus. MMH expresses increasing concern. Some negative results are false negatives. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Midland Hospital officials believe some of the negative COVID-19 results they've received are false negatives, and they are becoming increasingly concerned about that possibility, Dr. Larry Wilson said Friday. Wilson, Midland Memorial Hospital's medical chief of staff, said in an interview that the hospital's infectious disease and critical care doctors believe a percentage of the 64 patients who tested negative are infected with COVID-19. If you look at the Seattle data and elsewhere, they had about a 7% positivity rate on their COVID tests, which suggests that many people that are sick and infected aren't coming up positive on this test, he said. So we're having increasing concern that there may not be a super-sensitive test. It may not be helping us as much as we think it can. He said several patients admitted to the hospital have had symptoms and laboratory findings consistent with the novel coronavirus, but have tested negative. They have the characteristic lung appearance of the COVID-19 infection. They behave like the COVID-19 infection. They test negative for all the other normal viruses that might cause lung infections, and their COVID test is negative as well, Wilson said. The concern is that they probably have COVID, but somehow we're catching them at a time when they're not shedding the virus. It's a little too coincidental that we know we have it in the community. We've seen these patients in a larger number than we would normally see them, and we don't really have a good explanation for why they're behaving this way without attributing it to this new infection. It is possible that patients are falsely testing negative for other respiratory infections, such as the flu, Wilson said. He said data from China and other countries suggests the COVID-19 test has a sensitivity rate of 75%. Meaning it is not accurately detecting the virus in 25% of cases. The hospital is combating the possibility of false negatives by treating every patient who presents with symptoms as if they have the coronavirus, Wilson said. If they look like it, behave like it, we treat them like it, and treat them all the way through their illness, he said. He said the patients who have tested negative have still been advised to self-quarantine until at least 72 hours after their symptoms resolve. Anybody who's got a respiratory tract illness today, they should stay home, Wilson said. MMH officials are considering retesting patients who return negative results, but likely will not retest patients tested last week, according to Wilson. He said the virus is detectable in most people between 12 to 24 hours before they develop a fever and a few days after symptoms begin. Patients who have received treatment and are seeing an improvement in their symptoms have a small likelihood of testing positive for the virus, even if they have been infected with it, Wilson said. He said hospital staff might retest patients with acute symptoms going forward when rapid response tests are available and patients could be retested more quickly. Work week ends with two new coronavirus cases in Midland, by Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. Midland's first full week of confirmed coronavirus ended with cases 7 and 8 being announced. The seventh confirmed case is said to be a female in her 50s. The source is said to be travel-related, according to information from the Midland Health Department. The eighth case is a pediatric patient, later described as an infant. The source of exposure is also said to be travel-related. Both cases are said to be self-quarantining at home. The news of two more coronavirus cases ends the week with the following numbers. There are 8 confirmed cases in Midland County, 3 identified as male, 3 identified as female, and the other 2 were identified as juveniles or infants. There is 1 coronavirus-related death. Travel is said to be the source of exposure for 6 of the 8 cases. There are 19 patients in the hospital with respiratory and other symptoms and have been placed in areas referred to as the COVID-19 wards. 3 of those are in the critical care unit, and 1 of those is on a ventilator. Dr. Larry Wilson, Chief Medical Officer for Midland Memorial Hospital, said all 19 patients are being treated as if they have COVID-19. There have been 276 tests at Midland Memorial Hospital, with 5 positive tests, 79 negative tests, and 192 still pending. The other 3 confirmed cases came from tests of private offices and were reported to the Midland Health Department. Across the state, there have been 23,666 tests, 1,731 confirmed cases, and 23 deaths, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. The DSHS also reports cases in Midland, Crane, Martin, and Gaines counties. The first confirmed case in Ector County was reported on Friday. Ector County has 18 negative cases, 41 pending lab results, and 59 people who had been tested total as of Thursday, according to the Ector County Health Department website. no relaxing on the weekend. Officials at the press conference stated that Midland County residents needed to be on guard this weekend. The warm weather is a reason to be outside, but social distancing and hand washing are still required to keep the coronavirus cases to a minimum. My number one concern going forward is this reality that we can't relax what we're doing this weekend, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said. As a matter of fact, we need to stay vigilant. Do not take it easy this weekend. And for those developing symptoms, officials said it is critical to self-quarantine and stay isolated until there is no fever for 3 consecutive days. If everybody behaves that way, we'll curtail this, Wilson said. Coronavirus facts. Wilson said a person can't get coronavirus through a mosquito bite. Those who have acquired coronavirus during their travels have done so through travel abroad and within the states. The Midland County Council will meet Tuesday to talk about the declaration of disaster currently in place and if any changes are necessary. Experimental drug regimen being used at MMH with some good success, by Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Midland Memorial Hospital has been using an experimental drug regimen to treat patients who have or are suspected to have the novel coronavirus with some good success, President Russell Myers said during a press conference Friday. He said 2 drugs, hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, have been used to treat 11 patients. Hydroxychloroquine is often used to treat malaria, while azithromycin is a commonly prescribed antibiotic. We have had some good success, he said. Most patients who are believed to have COVID-19 are being treated with a drug regimen, Myers said. That protocol was developed by our clinical pharmacy team in conjunction with our infectious disease physician, he said. Infectious disease has consulted on all these patients, and so they're determining who gets the drug regimen, but the majority of our patients are taking it, he said. Patients are either receiving treatment and completing the regimen in the hospital or being discharged and given the 2 drugs to continue at home, he said. He said he did not know what form the drugs were being given for at-home use or for how many days. Myers said patients who are suspected to have the virus are being treated with the medications before they are confirmed positive. They're suspicious enough that the physicians are proceeding to use the drug regimen even though we don't have test results back on them, he said. The 2 drugs do have the potential to cause some side effects, including cardiovascular issues, Myers said. He said patients receiving the regimen are closely monitored to see if they develop any serious side effects. While several patients who have received the drug regimen have recovered or are improving, Myers cautioned that there is not concrete evidence yet to support the drug's effectiveness. There's a fair amount of anecdotal evidence. Nobody has done the kind of testing on this drug regimen that will confirm its efficacy, he said. We are getting anecdotes that it works, so we're working off those likelihoods, but not scientific certainties. I think the same thing is probably true here. We think it's working for some people. We don't know that for sure. Myers said it's possible people are fighting off the virus without the assistance of the medications, or that the management of their symptoms is improving their conditions. We have had several patients who have gotten better, and a few of them have been discharged from the hospital so far, he said, so something is working for those folks. The man in his 60s who died from coronavirus complications earlier this week was receiving the drug regimen, Myers said. He said he did not know how many days the man was receiving treatment. Death notices. Kenny Gilliam. Kenny Gilliam, 68, of Alpine, passed away on March 14, 2020, in Midland, Texas. Kenny was born on September 24, 1951, in Detroit, Michigan, to Lizzie and Kenneth Gilliam. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, March 28, 2020. Section A. Ector County reports first positive. Low test numbers and lack of info out of county. Ector County had its first reported case of COVID-19 Friday. County Judge Debbie Hayes announced the first positive result on Facebook and then held a hasty news conference where she defended the county's low testing numbers, saying they were following CDC guidelines on who should be tested. The county's website following the press conference had not been updated to reflect the one positive case, but stated 71 have been tested locally in the pandemic sweeping the globe. It showed 26 negative and 44 pending. Midland has tested more than four times that number. When pressed about why Ector County test numbers are so much lower than Midland's, she said, "Our community has been smart and we locked down," following Texas Governor Greg Abbott's emergency declaration. During the Facebook Live press conference, viewers repeatedly stated that they had symptoms but were turned away when seeking a test in Ector County. Many mocked the notion that Ector County has locked down with long grocery lines and many businesses still open. She also repeated that another reason Ector numbers are low is because private labs are not reporting numbers to Ector County. She did not say how she knows that private labs are doing tests if no one is reporting them to the county. She also said calls are being made to labs seeking information. She said she did not know why other counties don't seem to have that issue. She also said all information and new positives would be announced via their Facebook page to get information out early. Prior to the press conference Friday, county and city officials offered few answers to questions and instead offered a tour of their emergency command center for local media. Their website, which updated about 9 a.m. Friday, indicated that only 59 were tested with 18 negative and 41 pending. Emailed questions early in the day were not responded to by press time. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said he too had questions about the low number of tests locally. "Over the last 17 days, my attention has been focused every day on the state of Texas response to the virus, and I won't let up. However, in the last couple of days, many of you have asked me to step in to help find an explanation about the low testing total reported from Ector County," Landgraf wrote on Facebook. He said even some state agencies have expressed concerns about the apparent lack of testing. He said during calls with county officials, he was told that many of the specimens originating in Ector County are tested by private labs, and that those private labs are not reporting their results to the Ector County Health Department, and as a consequence, the private tests are not accounted for in the county's reported testing totals. One of the questions the OA sent to county officials was how would they know that there are many tests being done at private labs if they are not reporting them? The question was not answered by press time, nor a question about why the county is testing so few. Landgraf wrote that there is an apparent communication gap between the private labs and the county health department. "Other counties in Texas are not experiencing this problem, and we demand answers as to why Ector County is falling into this gap. County officials have requested that I investigate this matter with the private labs and remedy the problem. I'm happy to help do that, and as soon as the county officials send the contact information for the private labs that are involved, I will call them and ask why there's a reporting problem and do everything I can to close the communication gap." Landgraf said he is also working closely with administrators at both hospitals in Ector County to make sure that they're not running into any issues with COVID-19 testing at state labs. Testing is crucially important because we need to have data at our disposal to understand the true threat of the virus in the county. We need to have an accurate picture so that the best decisions can be made to respond and resources can be efficiently deployed to battle COVID-19 in this part of West Texas. That's the goal with testing, and I'm doing everything I can to empower our county officials who have a tough job to do. Landgraf also called for government transparency. Government that is of, by, and for the people should be open to the people, especially during a public health crisis. Every level of government should be transparent in its response, and you should be provided with as much information as is available. Meal Service Hours Expanded and Handle with Care Starts by Ruth Campbell. Meal service improvements with a new program aimed at helping some of the most vulnerable students in the district are being implemented as Ector County ISD continues to try to adapt to the coronavirus pandemic. Starting Monday, meals will be served from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. 5 days a week, and breakfast and lunch can be picked up at the same time. The district had been offering breakfast and lunch separately during different hours. And then on Friday, they'll pick up not only meals for Friday, but they'll pick up Saturdays and Sundays as well. And that all starts on Monday, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said. He added that the child still has to be present. A new program called Handle with Care started Thursday. We recognize that there is quite a bit of trauma and stress happening in our community, and so we are working closely with all of our law enforcement agencies, police, sheriff's office, and DPS. We worked with them to develop a program in which, if they are involved in an incident that incorporates a child in ECISD, then they're going to notify us if they feel that the child needs a little bit of follow-up. Perhaps that child is dealing with stress or trauma, or that they notice that the family unit may be stressed in general. They're going to let us know, and we're going to provide follow-up counseling support to that particular family, Murray said. For the last couple of weeks, Murray said he has been conducting an afternoon leadership call with all the leaders, principals, directors, and assistant superintendents in ECISD. Today, during that video conference, we were joined by the Commissioner of Education, Mike Morath. We have 1,200 districts in the state of Texas, and he chose us today, Thursday, to come and visit, so we were really pleased about that. He offered words of encouragement. He talked about the good work that our leaders are doing. He was very impressed with the quality of education that is happening in our virtual world. He commended our teachers and leaders for just making this huge transition between school the way it was 3 weeks ago and school that's happening today, Murray said. He added that Morath also provided a great deal of comfort to our leaders and encouragement because the work is really hard right now, and so we were honored to have him as a part of our meeting today. Steward Medical Group launches telehealth. Steward Healthcare announced Friday the implementation of telehealth visits, including the use of Microsoft Teams and FaceTime appointments with Steward Medical Group providers to expand access to care in response to the coronavirus, COVID-19. The telehealth video visits, conducted via smartphone or a desktop or laptop equipped with a web camera, are well suited for patients who may have flu-like symptoms and want to speak with a physician, or they may be for patients experiencing other routine ailments but do not want to travel to the office for fear of a potential exposure to the COVID-19 virus, a news release said. Telehealth appointments are available for primary care and internal medicine, as well as a broad range of specialized care, including cardiology, orthopedics, and women's health. Patients can access telehealth appointments with their physician or caregiver in two ways: using Microsoft Teams application or Apple FaceTime with an iPhone or iPad. Patient telehealth appointments will be scheduled through their doctor's office, and any patient needing an appointment should call their doctor's office. Approximately 3,000 Steward Medical Group providers are available to conduct telehealth visits. Steward Medical Group operates practices in 11 states, the release said. Once a telehealth visit is scheduled, the doctor's office will provide patients with an email invitation for their appointment time, along with detailed instructions on how to download and use either the Microsoft Teams or FaceTime applications if they do not already have access to them. For patients who prefer to see their doctor in person, Steward Medical Group clinics are open and continue to welcome patients for their appointments. The healthcare organization is closely monitoring COVID-19 and is following guidance from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and World Health Organization, and is working closely with local and state health departments in the care of patients, the release said. Meal Service Hours Expanded and Handle with Care Starts, by Ruth Campbell. Meal service improvements with a new program aimed at helping some of the most vulnerable students in the district are being implemented as Ector County ISD continues to try to adapt to the coronavirus pandemic. Starting Monday, meals will be served from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. 5 days a week, and breakfast and lunch can be picked up at the same time. The district had been offering breakfast and lunch separately during different hours. And then on Friday, they'll pick up not only meals for Friday, but they'll pick up Saturdays and Sundays as well. And that all starts on Monday, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said. He added that the child still has to be present. A new program called Handle with Care started Thursday. We recognize that there is quite a bit of trauma and stress happening in our community, and so we are working closely with all of our law enforcement agencies, police, sheriff's office, and DPS. We worked with them to develop a program in which, if they are involved in an incident that incorporates a child in ECISD, then they're going to notify us if they feel that the child needs a little bit of follow-up. Perhaps that child is dealing with stress or trauma, or that they notice that the family unit may be stressed in general. They're going to let us know, and we're going to provide follow-up counseling support to that particular family, Murray said. For the last couple of weeks, Murray said he has been conducting an afternoon leadership call with all the leaders, principals, directors, and assistant superintendents in ECISD. Today, during that video conference, we were joined by the Commissioner of Education, Mike Morath. We have 1,200 districts in the state of Texas, and he chose us today, Thursday, to come and visit, so we were really pleased about that. He offered words of encouragement. He talked about the good work that our leaders are doing. He was very impressed with the quality of education that is happening in our virtual world. He commended our teachers and leaders for just making this huge transition between school the way it was 3 weeks ago and school that's happening today, Murray said. He added that Morath also provided a great deal of comfort to our leaders and encouragement, because the work is really hard right now, and so we were honored to have him as a part of our meeting today. Obituary for Saturday, March 28th. Joe Irvin Shoemate. Joe Irvin Shoemate, 91, of Graham, passed away at his home Monday, March 23rd. He was born in Red Springs, February 14, 1929, to Maud Tucker and Pete Shoemate, and was one of eight siblings. He married Joyce Ellen Nunn in 1950. Surviving him are his sister Senna Wynn of Red Springs, his son Brian Shoemate and wife Shirley of Voca, daughter Linda Milliken and husband Homer of Odessa, five grandchildren, and eight great-grandchildren. A memorial service will be held at a later date in Red Springs due to the current COVID-19 restrictions. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Red Springs Baptist Church, 11188 FM 2069, Seymour, Texas 76280. Death notices. Arturo Antunez Garcia. Arturo Antunez Garcia, 64, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March 25th. Chapel service will be held at 7 p.m. Sunday, March 29th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Kenny Gilliam. Kenny Gilliam, 68, of Alpine, died Saturday, March 14th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Depression during social distancing. Carol Cates is the Chief Nursing Officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. You can reach her via email at carol.cates, C-A-T-E-S, at steward, steward.org. When I watch or read the news right now between the COVID-19 outbreak and the economy, it's hard not to get down. Add that to worries about my friends and family, who are at high risk for complications if they get the disease, and the worries I have for the nurses, doctors, and the first responders in my life, not to mention the patients under our care. Down becomes more of a constant than a once in a while. Adding social distancing needs and not being able to hug, shake hands, lay a caring hand on the arm, or spend time with most of the people I am so worried about means, for me, a lot of time feeling down. The worst part of feeling down for a long time is when that feeling down crosses into depression. Depression is a real problem for a significant number of people on any given day. But when the burden of social distancing is added, depression can hit people harder and in greater quantities. Depression is a serious medical condition that can lead to death or serious harm if untreated. The method of death may not be the same as untreated diabetes, high blood pressure, or heart disease. But depression, just like all kinds of mental illness, is exactly that, an illness. Just because the manner of death or injury is most often self-inflicted and there is no lab test or physical wound that shows the person has a medical condition, it does not mean depression is not an illness and that person should not seek treatment. I'm going to end this paragraph and this article in the same way. If you're feeling depressed and you're considering or planning on harming or killing yourself, please reach out to someone. Call 911 or come to the emergency room. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. Or reach out to a friend, a family member, a spiritual leader, or a mental health care provider. The manner in which you reach out is not as important as that you reach out. Please reach out to someone before you put a plan to harm or kill yourself into place. The world needs you. We are better because you are here. A division of the National Institutes of Health, NIH, called the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, has published a great document, Tips for Social Distancing, Quarantine, and Isolation During an Infectious Disease Outbreak. You can review the entire document yourself at https://www.samhsa.gov/sites/default/files. tips-social-distancing-quarantine-isolation-031620.pdf. Some of the things I found really helpful. First, everyone reacts differently to stressful situations like social distancing and isolation. Anxiety, fear, and worry are normal. So are anger, loneliness, frustration, and uncertainty. When those feelings are cause for concern is when they last for 2 to 4 weeks or more. At that point, consider seeking help from a mental health professional. They have several suggestions for dealing with the feelings associated with this outbreak. Understand the risks. Get your news about the COVID-19 outbreak from credible sources like the NIH, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the Texas Department of State Health Services, and limit 24/7 exposure to media, particularly social media, as they can increase feelings of anxiety. Be your own advocate. Speak up if you have been asked to isolate or quarantine. Your basic safety needs to be met. Ask about grocery and supply delivery, how you get your medications or see a healthcare provider. Educate yourself. Don't be afraid to ask questions of your healthcare provider or health authorities. It's easy to forget questions when speaking to these individuals for just a few minutes. So write down your questions and bring with you to your doctor's visits or have handy with virtual or home visits that you can ask when you are with those individuals. Work with your employer to reduce financial stress. Connect with others using things like Skype or FaceTime, phone, email, and text to stay in touch. Use practical ways to cope and relax. Deep breathing exercises, stretching, meditation, or prayer can be helpful. Hobbies and home-based exercise are also helpful. If you do have to do something stressful, reward yourself with something fun. Talk about your experiences and feelings to those close to you. Mostly, actively work to maintain a sense of hope and positive thinking. Writing down positive things or things you are grateful for is helpful to many people. And just to emphasize this one last time, if you are feeling depressed and you are considering or planning harming or killing yourself, please reach out to someone. Call 911, come to the emergency room, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Or reach out to a friend, a family member, a spiritual leader, or a mental health care provider. The way you reach out is not important as it is for you to reach out for help and continue to reach out for help as long as you're having those feelings. Please reach out to someone before you put your plan into place. The world needs you. We are better because you are here. Social distancing does not mean you're alone. It just means we physically are a little farther apart. Mental and emotionally, we are in this together, and together we will pull through this. West Texans are strong alone. Together, we are invincible. You can reach Carol Cates via email at carol.cates@steward.org.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.